Good evening, everyone. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishka. And welcome to the Beacon.
Everyone is having a great evening so far, and like we said, this is a brand new edition of The Beacon. Today is Wednesday, June 21st, and of course, if you're listening at any other time, you know, feel free to, you'll be listening our podcast, so regardless of the day and time, welcome.
Yeah.
And how are you, Brett?
That is one thing that we haven't really touched on very much, is that if you do miss our live show on Wednesday evenings, we do show up on our podcast feed on our website, which is www.chicagolighthouse.org/radio, and there is a podcast feed there that has all of our Beacon shows, and then a few others if you wanted to listen to some of the other content that's available.
That's right, Brett. There's always, you know, a variety of shows on Chris Radio and different things of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of shows, Brett, what do we have in store for today, for today's Beacon?
Well, I actually will have a great interview with Alex Mooney from the Chicago Children's Theater. And you actually have a really cool interview with, I believe you said it's called Two Blind Brothers.
Two Blind Brothers, yeah.
And they have a clothing line that they've put together. And so we'll hear a little bit about both the Chicago Children's Theater and Two Blind Brothers moving forward. But I know you wanted to touch on Father's Day, which is always good.
Speaking of family, right, Brett?
Yes, exactly. we like to give thank yous to our fathers. I have a great dad, and he's been a great provider for our family, and he's definitely where I get my sense of humor from and my jolly personality of trying to get to know everybody that I come in contact with. So I thank my dad for all he's done throughout the years, and I'm pretty sure you probably have a few words yourself there, right, Sandy?
Absolutely. Father's Day, you know, it was last Sunday on June 18th, and to all the wonderful fathers out there, I know it's a little late, but happy Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're absolutely right, Brett. You know, fathers are so important. I, too, was very fortunate to have a very supportive father, a great sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes a little too dry for me, or even a little too dark.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, like you said, I am very fortunate to have a wonderful father, wonderful family overall. But I know that this was a day to recognize the very important role that fathers, or those people who played the role of a father, have on all of us. And I know that with our family, you know, we took my dad out to eat. There's a really nice Mexican place out south in Harvey, mm-hmm. which is where I live nearby, and it's we've gone there for years. Ever since I was little, I remember going there Saturday evenings or Sunday evenings for dinner. You know, great Mexican food,
mm-hmm.
great drinks as well, great everything.
That's good.
Yeah, and so yeah, and my dad wanted to go there, and I think overall, like I said, we've gone there, gosh, for at least 20, 25 years now. And, you know, so it holds very special memories,
right,
for all of us. And, yeah, that was fun. The weather was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hung out outside with the family and just had a nice weekend. And now, you know, we're back with everyone here on the Beacon.
Yep. Our family, actually, we went out to one of our favorite barbecue places that I know I've been going to my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Russell's. It's up north. And Yeah, my dad, he's had his fair share of some health stuff, and so he's had to eat some more heart-healthy stuff, and so yesterday was a little bit of him being able to binge on some barbecue ribs that he he definitely... that was just a present in itself. Like, if that's all he got yesterday, it wasn't, but if that's all he got, he would have been a happy camper. He loves those ribs, and I had a slab. I think almost everybody at the table had a few ribs for themselves, but yeah, I had a slab and got to hang out with my niece and nephew, which I always love, and with Mr. Poet over here, he got to get a little bit more acquainted with Charlotte and Owen, my niece and nephew, and... Sure. And so they're getting used to Poet as well, and so yeah, it was a great time with the family. All of the kids were able to make it. We all had off of work, and so it was nice. Both my parents always love when we can all get together, and that it's not just, you know, one person missing or two people missing because of work. So when it happens that all of us can make it, it just seems like it's a little bit more special when we're all there and no one's missing out on the fun.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, and I think that holidays like this, like Mother's Day, Father's Day, I think that's what it's all about.
Right.
You know, even if you don't have a big cookout or a big party, you know, even if it's simple things, like you said, going out to dinner, mm-hmm. you know, like in your case, your dad enjoying, you know, the ribs, and mm-hmm. it's just all about family and having a great time. Especially now that it's summer, and I know that our next holiday here in the United States will be the 4th of July. Do you have any big plans for that?
As of right now...
Or is it too soon to tell?
As of right now, normally it's just I'm with my family, and there were quite a few years there that we would set off fireworks. Like, me and my family would go out to Indiana, pick up some fireworks.
Yep,
and,
yep.
And our entire subdivision out by my parents would basically be setting off fireworks. So the police really couldn't have done too much of anything, because then they'd have to arrest everybody in the
exactly.
subdivision or take away everybody's fireworks, which they didn't really have enough space for. And most of us were all really, really safe. And it was at the same time as the town's fireworks.
Mm-hmm,
so ended
mm-hmm.
up, we were just really good at kind of timing everything where,
sure.
you know, the police were busy with other things.
Exactly.
And then we'd barbecue, you know, just like what anybody does on 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
You blow part of the earth up with fireworks, and then you also celebrate with barbecuing some meat and mm-hmm. some other, you know, watermelon and great desserts and stuff like that. So,
exactly.
We know how to put on a holiday here in the States, and my family definitely goes all out, and my mom is a person who doesn't really know how to portion very well, so she basically portions for an entire army. So we definitely have leftovers for a few days afterwards as well.
That's it. That's always what happens, you know, the leftovers, and
yep.
in occasion there might be a few fireworks left over, but not necessarily all the time. Like, you, I remember that when we were kids, we'd go out to Indiana and buy fireworks,
uh-huh.
and that we'd go with one of our uncles, you know, and spend the whole day getting, you know, buying the fireworks, then going out to McDonald's or something afterwards.
Right. Uh-huh.
And on the 4th of July, like you said, burn the fireworks. The police was unable to tell because a lot of people were doing it.
Yep.
And, you know, just had a great time.
That's good.
But, you know, it's all about family and spending quality time together.
Yeah, and speaking of family, I think it goes right into what your segment's about. Did you want to touch on that a little bit further?
So, a lot of people haven't probably heard about the Two Blind Brothers business. Now, this business, it's based in New York. And it has two missions. One, to create clothing that has special braille designs, basically to create awareness about blindness and vision impairment.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is to raise funds for research for retinal diseases.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people here, you know, our listeners might be familiar, or might, you know, themselves have diseases like Leber's or retinal degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a variety of diseases out there, and the mission of these two brothers, Bradford and Brian Manning, is to, like I said, create awareness and also raise funds. So, yeah, let's take a listen and we'll be back. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Sandy's View. A few days ago, we celebrated National Siblings Day, and it's a time to remember the importance that siblings have in our lives. Today, I'm speaking with Brad and Brian Manning, and they are the founders and owners of the Two Blind Brothers business. And this business, it aims to both create new clothing designs and to raise funds and awareness about different blinding eye diseases. Brad and Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Well, first off, a little bit of background, because I understand that you both have a visual impairment. You both have Stargardt's disease. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about your story?
Sure. So I'm the older brother, so I'll go first.
Fair enough.
So our story is we were both diagnosed with Stargardt's disease, which is a retinal degenerative disease. We both had symptoms around the age of five. I was a few years older than Brian. Obviously, very hard to get diagnosed at that age because these are sort of rare diseases. We sort of grew up with a visual impairment. Our vision now is around 2400. And with Stargardt's disease, you lose your center vision. So we keep our peripheral vision for the most part. That's mostly the case. And then, but you do lose your center vision. So some of the first things that get difficult are sort of recognizing faces and reading small print. So Brian and I ended up both living in New York City in different and working in different industries. I worked for an investment management company, and Brian did data sales, sales for a data company. And we decided a little over a year ago that we wanted to start a project focused on clothing. And the way we came to that is, you know, if you're blind or you're visually impaired, you know what a pain that shopping is, and you walk into a store and the first thing that you pay attention to is that sense of touch and the feeling of those clothes to feel the quality. So we sort of based all of our designs around that, and we give 100% of the profits that we make from the clothing business back to preclinical research for retinal eye disease. That includes things like adult macular degeneration, Usher syndrome, LCA, retinitis pigmentosa, and of course our condition, Stargardt.
Yeah, so you mentioned the clothing. Can either of you tell us a little bit about the design? You know, because I understand that some of the clothing, and I was looking at your designs, and some of the clothing even has Braille incorporated into the actual clothes. So can you guys tell us a bit about the design? Do you guys design the clothing? How does that work?
Yeah, 100%. Brad and I actually did all of the design ourselves, so we can take all the credit for the good ones, and I can push all the blame on Brad for the bad ones. That makes it easy. So on the actual design, we chose to kind of go with a Henley-style shirt for men and women because we love the idea and the look of the Henley because it can be dressed down and dressed up, and so you can be comfortable wearing it all day. And it also gave us the flexibility to really spend a lot of time and diligence on the touch and the feel of the actual fabric. It gave us a lot of flexibility to try as many different fabrics as we could until we found the one that was truly perfect for us. And then actually on the Braille side, on every single one of our shirts, we have a little metal tag that says a phrase or a word. So right now, a lot of them say brother or vision, and we're going to have more tags coming out. But Braille was so important to us because growing up, Brad and I both learned Braille because we weren't sure how far our vision was going to progress, or lack thereof. And so we were taught to learn Braille, but it was always this really close brotherly bond with us because it was this little bit of a secret language that we could both speak, and that it was something that it was made us unique in our own way, that because the rest of the world couldn't read Braille. Even though it was only mostly in elevators and outside of bathrooms, it still made us feel so special.
Yeah, so even if you got in trouble at home or something, you could both communicate in that, like you said, that secret code.
Exactly.
That's great. And so how many designs do you have? I know you have for, you know, both men and women. How many, what's the selection like right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have long sleeve and short sleeve Henley mm-hmm. shirts for men. We have long sleeve Henleys for women, V-neck for women, and then we have our Braille tee line, which we're so happy about, because we actually replaced some of the normal letters with Braille letters, so we'll take out the vowels, and so you'll actually still be able to, sighted people or people who do not know Braille will be able to understand the actual meaning of the word, but still we'll get the feel of kind of walking through a little bit of Braille.
Oh, interesting.
So much fun.
Sure, sure. No, and it's something that you said, you know, both people who are blind and sighted will be able to understand and enjoy, which that's always,
absolutely,
you know, great when it comes to inclusion nowadays and integration. And so that's great. And as far as the proceeds, how much of the proceeds from your sales, how much does that go towards supporting research?
Yeah, so basically Brian and I have committed to give 100% of our profits mm-hmm. Back to preclinical research. And what that base, and the whole reason for that is, you know, we didn't want to put another dollar in our pocket from this company. We care more about this cause. We've just been fortunate that we've gotten a lot of great media and support on it, so it's been going so well.
No, and I see you've gotten support from people, for listeners that are tuning in. You've gotten support from people like Ellen DeGeneres and, you know, several of other personalities, so that's great.
Yeah, honestly, it's something we never expected. Ellen DeGeneres has been an awesome, awesome help to get our story out. Richard Branson of Virgin Group, Ashton Kutcher, a few others.
Sure.
And it's, yeah, it's been fantastic. So, you know, we make it super simple. 100% of the profits that we would otherwise take from the company goes directly to preclinical research. And really what we're doing there is, you know, it's a very, very exciting time in medicine. I mean, we're really going through a medical revolution right now with a lot of the new therapies and pharmaceuticals and gene therapy and gene editing and in stem cell therapies. And, you know, what we generally try to communicate to people is we're really on the 5-yard line of major advancements that could have dramatic impacts, particularly for the eye, because the eye is sort of a gateway for a lot of these treatments for a variety of reasons. It's sort of the first organ that people look at for some of these new therapies. And so we just want to help get that new research into clinical trials and get them into therapies that can hopefully cure people in the future.
Yeah, no, and here at the Chicago Lighthouse, we have the Pangier Center for Inherited Retinal Diseases, and it's mm-hmm. led by, you know, our renowned Dr. Gerald Fishman. And yeah, we see firsthand all the wonderful research nowadays that's going on, you know, like you said, with genetics and stem cells. So it's, and then every day it seems like, you know, you'll see these articles on the internet about new research. So it's definitely an exciting and amazing time to both see this research and for, you know, people like you that are working to support it. So that's great.
And you, Sandy. I mean, the work that you do is amazing. So
thanks.
And that's the part of this whole community that we love so much, is that everyone in the visually impaired community or people who are close to it are so passionate and so helpful and so uplifting. It's truly humbling to even be able to speak with you or be able to speak with this community at all.
Oh, and you know, that's the only way we can, you know, raise awareness about all the different issues and the different things that still need to, you know, be fixed and everything. So yeah, like you said, it's a team effort, and it's great to be working together.
Yeah, and honestly, I, you know, just going back to the research a little bit.
Sure.
You know, we've been so like the other day, we were actually getting a big update on sort of the research side. And I mean, there are things that are already being funded by private capital. They don't need charitable dollars because they're sort of commercially relevant therapies. But, you know, companies like Alkeus making a new derivative of vitamin A for the eye to help with our condition, or RetroSense, or Spark Therapeutics, which is developing the gene therapy for LCA. I mean, there's just so much going on for people to be excited about. And I think, you know, in the next few years here, we're going to see some huge advances. So it's just one of those things that gets us very excited.
Definitely. And now for people that, you know, have heard about the clothing, about what your profit support, where can people find, you know, more information or buy the clothing?
Yeah, there's two great places. If you just go to Two Blind Brothers, that's T-W-O, blindbrothers.com. That has all of our information and where you can look and purchase some of the beautiful clothes. Or go to our Facebook page. It's Two Blind Brothers on Facebook, or facebook.com/twoblindbros, to just learn a little bit more about us, because that's where we put up all of our information. You get to kind of see the team behind Two Blind Brothers and just our whole kind of family over here.
Great. Well, is there anything else you guys would like to share or add?
No, you know, we just, you know, we're just very thankful, and we appreciate you caring about our story and offering to have us on. You know, we really admire, like Brian said, all of this community. You know, it's something that we've really have just sort of lived privately our whole lives until we sort of started this project, not really knowing, you know, how close-knit the experience was for people, you know, in the visual impairment community. And so we'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us emails. You can shoot us Facebook messages. And, you know, you'll get a response from Brian and I. And we just really appreciate it.
Great. And for anyone that would like to find out more about the shirts, or purchase the clothing, or, you know, get in touch with Brian or Brad, feel free to check out their website. Again, that's www.twoblindbrothers, and that's T-W-O, blindbrothers.com. All right. Thank you so much, Brett and Brian, and the best of luck with your project.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And yeah, you know, I thought, Brett, that segment was very interesting. We've heard about a lot of designers. I know that Tommy Hilfiger and a few others are working on accessible clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even stories of models with disability being on the runway, you know, to show clothing that's accessible and fashionable. You know, it's something that's growing. So this concept of having clothing with Braille, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, I think one of the things that most people might not like think of very much is clothes being accessible. Like, they think that, oh, well, how hard is it to just slip a shirt over my head, or how hard is it to put a pair of pants on? But depending on your disability, that can be extremely difficult. And for us, I know, like, the challenge I have is a lot of times I'll put on something and I don't even know what color I'm wearing.
Exactly.
Unless I use like some type of device,
labeling it,
right?
You know, it has a particular texture to it,
right?
You know, and by the way, Brett, this is something that we have covered on Sandy's View on
our
blog.
Mm-hmm.
It's at chicagolighthouse.org, and you can read the blog there on chicagolighthouse.org. But yeah, no, that's for people who are blind or visually impaired. That's one of the issues, like you said, distinguishing it, knowing the colors. Sure, we've come up with different methods of doing it, you know, or just our creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But even designs like this, I think it can help, you know, if it has, like Brett and Brian were saying in the interview, this has a metal plate, sort of like a metal plate, about the size of a tag, a clothing tag, and it has like Braille abbreviations on it, letters.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I think that can go a long way in helping people who are blind or visually impaired to distinguish it.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are definitely going, you know, a lot of the designers and stuff are trying to go for to like a tagless shirt, yes. You know, or a tagless underwear, a tag, you know, it's everything that you, clothing wise, they're trying to go away from tags. And that can make things a little bit difficult, especially like I've noticed with some of my t-shirts that, you know, I'm like, okay, is this the front?
And like, exactly.
If it's a newer shirt, then that the like ink that they use to put in the sizes is still, you can feel it enough.
Yeah.
But other than that, once you have a shirt for a while and it starts to kind of bleed into the shirt a little bit more, you don't really know until you put it on. You're like, okay, this feels like it's on backwards. And then you like turn it back around. And so those are things that I don't think a lot of people take into account. And, you know, if you're not blind, say you do have some other type of disability, maybe you had a stroke or something like that that keeps you from using one side, you know, one side better than the other. Maybe it's hard to get on a coat. And so figuring out different ways of being able to make these different, you know, materials or different ways of putting it on a little bit easier for someone. I think it's great that a lot of these companies are trying to figure out different ways of accommodating each individual, that they don't have to feel like they have to get something specially made or specially ordered, that now that they're at least thinking about this and accessibility is becoming more of a, you know, it's not a thing in the background. It's becoming more on the forefront of them actually thinking about it in being able to develop this all the way around from the beginning stages.
Yeah, that reminded me of an interview I did about a year ago. Runway of Dreams, they're a company that specializes on making designs that not on selling clothing itself, but just coming up with new concepts to make clothing more accessible, like adding magnets to clothing so that, you know, people can easily button it up, people with motor issues, motor disabilities, or Velcro, or things like that. But it's like the CEO of that company said, you know, we've come up with clothing lines for children, for even our pets, you know, dogs. But people with disabilities, you know, we are still left behind when it comes to accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's great to see that more and more companies are working to make clothing more accessible and fashionable at the same time. And I know that, speaking of things that are both accessible, you know, that are designed for people with disabilities, I know that you recently had an interesting conversation with the children's theater.
I did, yeah. Alex Mooney actually came in the studio with me, and we did a great interview talking about the great programs that they have over at the Chicago Children's Theater. I've been there quite a few times with my parents, actually come with me to some of the shows, and the last one I saw was Pinocchio, and it's a little bit of a darker take that they ended up bringing into this, you know, what we know as the Disney classic.
Sure.
What was interesting is what I liked about it, and dealing with like the accessibility side, was Pinocchio was actually a deaf actor.
Really?
And so whenever Pinocchio was speaking, he was actually speaking through Jiminy Cricket.
Interesting.
And so that was something that was very, very cool. And they actually had different portions of the play that were done in sign language. And so with audio description, that was really, really necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just really cool to see them implement, you know, a deaf character and being able to be so creative of using, you know, the conscience character as his voice, of being able to interact with the people around him. And to be able to interact with us as the audience as well. And so I just loved that part, and it was just really, really well done. It was a little bit darker than what I think most kids are used to, but but all the kids seem to really love it. And they just do some great things there. And so I definitely hope that all of you guys enjoyed this interview with Alex. Me and him had a great conversation, so here it is. Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff once again. I have actually a good friend of mine in here. We've actually gotten to know each other over these last few months quite a bit. I've headed out to the Chicago Children's Theater. We have Alex here. Alex, why don't you introduce yourself and tell everybody a little bit what you do with the Chicago Children's Theater.
Absolutely, Brett. I appreciate the friendly introduction. Mm-hmm. Happy to call you friend. Mm-hmm. So my name is Alex Mooney. I am the Access and Inclusion Manager for Chicago Children's Theater. I am the first of that position. It was created back in the fall of 2015, and it's basically my job to make sure that all of our programming and the things that we do in the theater and out of the theater are inclusive and accessible to everybody. I just took off my name tag there. Sorry. So I work in a lot of places right now. We have administrative offices in Wicker Park. Mm-hmm. We have a theater that we use in the Gold Coast at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, where our last production this season will be held. That's Brown Bear, Brown Bear. Mm-hmm. And then we also just opened a brand new space called The Station. It's actually an old police station, and we've turned it into a theater and educational space. Mm-hmm. So we've got a show running. As of right now, I think by the time this airs, our show Pinocchio will be closing there. Mm-hmm. But we have 5 classrooms on the upper level. One classroom dedicated entirely to the Red Kite Project, which I can talk about later, but mm-hmm. basically the Red Kite Project is our project that works with kids on the autism spectrum through theater, and we have a lot of iterations of that program. And then downstairs we've got a small performance parlor in our main lobby, and then Black Box Theater that'll seat about between 110 to 150 folks at its main capacity.
Yeah, it's a really cool building. I was able to make it out there for one of the performances, the first performance you guys actually had in
that was right.
In the theater, and so that was quite fun. You guys have a building that dreams, which
That's
is
true.
Quite fun. You can explain a little bit about that.
That's really true. So the building on the top and bottom floors have northeast-facing windows on the corners of the building, and we have worked with, I think at this point, 27 different CPS schools to create these photographs of kids in science coats and mm-hmm. using different sorts of mechanical objects and really far out looking stuff to create these photos of kids in the city who are going to be the architectures of the future, the dreamers of dreams. Mm-hmm. So from about 5 to 7 each night, the building itself dreams, and those windows are filled with projections from the inside of the building that run on a loop. So you see those kids, you'll see different seasonal things as they're happening. Mm-hmm. There are animations that people on our staff have created, and it really gives people on the outside of the building a really nice chance to see just a small amount of what we're capable of and what our taste is, and mm-hmm. And give them a chance to think about what their kid might be able to do in our organization. And the whole concept behind it came from our community programs artistic director, Frank Maugery, who comes to us from Red Moon. Mm-hmm. But he wanted the building to dream, and so it does.
So why don't you go into like the camps and the programs that you actually offer, ranging from the disability side of things for people who are blind, visually impaired,
sure
deaf,
thing.
Autism friendly, any of those mm-hmm. type of programs you want to cover, feel free.
Sure. I'll start with the Red Kite Project.
Sure.
It's the oldest of our kind of outreach programs for kids on the spectrum. The Red Kite Project was started by our artistic director, Jackie Russell, after she was working in a school residency at Agassiz Elementary. And she was working with kids on the spectrum and was fascinated and in love with how they thought about things and mm-hmm. experienced the world. And so she sought to create programming specifically for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Red Kite Project has within it several iterations. The first would be Red Kite Drama Time. So that is a set batch of curriculum that we can take out into any school system for kids, I would say, between ages 6, or really we've worked younger, actually. We worked at a therapeutic day school for kids who were 4.
Mm-hmm.
So we've worked with kids from age 4 all the way up through high school.
Okay.
And basically the focus of Drama Time is to engage the kids with extrasensory play, imaginative play, turn-taking, games that include games that require or at least try to elicit eye contact and stimulus and response. So it's really a way to try and build a social group through theater in kids with autism, which can be very difficult for them.
Yep.
Right now we are in 11 Chicago public schools doing 8-week residencies with two teaching artists we've sent out there for that, and hopefully that work can continue. We've gotten some grants from the Polk Brothers Foundation, which has made those residencies possible, and we're very grateful. Then I could talk about our Red Kite Adventures. So these are short 35 to 45 minute theatrical experiences where kids on the spectrum are invited to experience it however they need to. It's completely interactive. So we limit the size of each audience. It's usually about 10 kids or less. And there's never a stage. Everybody's in the same plane. We have information about the kids before they come to let us know what their interests are, what their communication level might be, if there are any things that cause them discomfort or might trigger a bad reaction in some way. So we're prepared for those kids. And from the very beginning, it's very personalized, so that we're able to first sing hello to the kids and really put them in the show. And then throughout a kind of loose narrative, we take them through an adventure and ask them to participate in different ways. We just closed our newest Red Kite adventure called Red Kite Treasure Adventure. It's based loosely on Edith Nesbit's book Treasure Seekers, where kids break their father's vase after they've played ball in the house, something that he just told them not to do. The kids decide that they have to replace it somehow. They find out the vase is made in China. They decide to dig to China. They end up in Chinatown. And they end up there on Chinese New Year, so they have this huge whirlwind adventure going through Chinatown, trying to get the vase back from a sea serpent. And throughout that entire time, kids are engaged by the different props that we put in front of them, different songs they can sing. When we dug to China, the kids got to crawl through this massive tunnel in the room, which was really, really fun.
Very cool.
And we had kids who just wanted to get in on the act and did so by following the actors, miming choreography, even singing songs that they were hearing for the first time just to be a part of it. So
very nice.
Those shows are incredible to be a part of, and I'm happy. And they're also available to tour. So we're looking at touring to at least three places right now in October and November of this year. Most likely we'll be going back to Burlington, Vermont. They've hosted us a couple of times. And then we're looking into getting into more spaces out on the East Coast. But if anybody out there is listening and wants to bring this home, we're available. Then we have Camp Red Kite. That's a 3-week summer arts day camp for kids on the autism spectrum, and we've increased our age range this year. So we are seeing campers between the ages of 8 and 22. We employ teaching artists who have extensive training in working with kids with autism. We also pair each group of kids, and there's usually about 10 kids or less in each group. We're striving for 3 groups this year, so hopefully we can get up to 30 kids. We pair each of those groups with a special educator from the world of autism education. Our two tried and true teachers are Lisa Halsom and Patty Walsh, who have years of experience with autism classrooms. They're the ones teaching our apprentices, teaching our teaching artists before camp even begins. So we have an informed staff that can meet the needs of kids on the spectrum, no matter what their limitations might be. So we have kids who maybe don't have language yet, and we're able to communicate with them using either PEC boards or signs of some kind. We try and meet them exactly halfway so that we can give them a true and full camp experience. But the kids cycle through 4 classes: music, art, movement, and drama. By the end of those 3 weeks, the kids get to participate in a day called Share the Arts, where their parents and family members travel with them through those classes, and they get to show off everything they've learned. This year, with our older age group, we have a brand new age set of 15 to 22-year-olds. We're going to be trying to build a performance with them during those 3 weeks. So kind of a smaller version of one of our Red Kite adventures. We're really hoping that we can create that with those kids and give them a deeper experience of theater. For a couple reasons, we've we haven't worked with kids in that age range before, and
right.
so many services drop off for kids as they age, and their high schools no longer have programming for them, or they don't have any way to express themselves outside of you know what they might be doing in their own homes. So we really want to give those kids something to strive for,
mm-hmm.
and we want to give the younger kids a chance to see what they might be capable of in the years to come. It's something
yep.
to look forward to. So I'm really excited about the expanded age range.
That's very cool. Why don't you kind of touch on a little bit of for your performances that you guys do, some of the accessible options that you guys have dealing with like touch tours and all.
Absolutely,
that stuff.
I'm happy to. So we had been doing. Kind of catch-as-catch-can accessible services based on the particular show.
Mm-hmm.
And a little over a year ago, me and the team that was around me decided to host what we call Access Weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So now every production that we do, regardless of what the content is, we include all of the services that we offer in one weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, we're just about to close Pinocchio. Our Access Weekend included three performances. Each of those was open captioned.
Mm-hmm.
And we also hosted a touch tour.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great touch tour guide that we've been using consistently. His name is Matt Lauterbach. He's
mm-hmm.
a documentary filmmaker. He's incredible with kids and great with adults, too. You
yep.
know, you've done it.
Yep.
Following the touch tour, we have audio description. We've got a couple of audio describers we've used in the past. I can give a shout-out to Martin Wild
mm-hmm.
and Jack Miggins.
Yep.
They've been incredible. And then we also offer sensory-friendly performances. So, again, if you've got people in your family or you know folks who have autism or sensory processing disorders, we offer those sensory-friendly performances for them as well. So during a sensory-friendly performance, we create a social story to prepare anybody for the building and the play itself. We keep the house lights at about 30%, so it's not totally dark.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quiet room separate from the performance space where people can go if they need to take a break, and any jarring light or sound cues are lessened. And we offer each of those services during our Access Weekends. I've gotten to, since we've been doing those for over a year now, we've got some really consistent audience members who are
mm-hmm.
coming to these touch tours especially. Those are so magnificent to see and
yep.
so fun for those families who are coming. We have one family who come consistently, and they have a young daughter and son. The daughter,
I have them both. They
yeah,
are
yeah, you
very
have.
Cool.
They're so fun. The
yeah.
young daughter has, she has low central vision, so she's not completely blind. Audio description kind of distracts her, so
mm-hmm.
she likes to sit up front and just watch what she can.
Yeah.
And then her brother is completely blind, so he loves the audio description. And they will usually come, if not with people from their school, they'll come with a set of a family friends,
mm-hmm.
usually a pair of siblings that come with them.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to see them, like, spending time on the stage, messing with the props, checking out the costumes,
mm-hmm.
pretending to be in the shows beforehand
yep.
is so fun, because that's a day out that family has to themselves that nobody else in our audience that day gets to take part in.
Yep.
That is something special that they can hold on to for the rest of their lives, and hopefully they feel the same way. I get so much out of watching them enjoy these touch tours.
Yeah, what's really nice from my experience at the Chicago Children's Theater is it doesn't matter what your age is, you're going to have a good time there. You're going to enjoy the shows because they do a very good job of trying to include all ages from as, you know, young as maybe, what, 3 years old?
Yeah.
All the way up to a big kid like myself and older. you know, the last show that I went and saw, that was actually a very popular show. It was
Magic City, wasn't it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they put on really great shows. That company that you guys work with, that was live cinema?
Manual cinema.
Manual cinema,
mm-hmm.
yeah. They are very, very cool. I've seen a couple of their shows, and they do a very interactive show.
They do.
From the,
your ears all the way through your eyes of just giving you a lot to be able to take in. And so it's a very, very cool experience. No matter what play you go there to see or performance you go there to see, I've seen A Light in the Dark, which is a dance performance, which is the only dance performance I've actually seen that's audio described, which is really, really cool to see and gives me hope that other theaters will hopefully follow suit somewhere down the line.
I was really happy with A Light in the Dark, that was handled like it was. That was a show brought in by Thodos Dance Company, and it was about the relationship between Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was a dance piece, but there were also some scenes that took place within the dance itself. We got to hear some of the language that Helen Keller later used to describe her experience as a child and working with Annie Sullivan. And the audio description for a dance piece, I had no idea how complicated and complex that was going to be, but I think they did a really good job of bringing that to our audience who had vision issues. And we also had Barbie Greenwater, who is an ASL interpreter with a group called Lotus Sign, and she was our interpreter for 5 school performances and for our Access Weekend. So for those school performances, we actually didn't have, for 4 of the 5 school performances, we didn't have anybody request ASL, but we felt that it was so important to put ASL in front of as many students as possible, to bring the world of access and inclusion to them, right in front of them, in such a deeper way. I think that was a big win, especially for that show. And then, for our last school performance, we had a group come of, I believe it was 53 students who were deaf, and I am totally blanking on what school they came from, and I'm,
Brett, where are they from?
SASED. They were a SASED school.
Okay.
They came with 53 students who were deaf to take part in that show, and that was our largest audience of deaf or hard of hearing people that we'd ever had.
That's very neat.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to actually check out what Chicago Children's Theater has to offer, can you give them a rundown of a website, how to contact you, and then maybe the address?
Absolutely. So if you go on our website, chicagochildrenstheater.org, you can check out our current season. We have just one more show left in this season by the time this is airing in the middle of May. We're finishing up Pinocchio, and now we've got Brown Bear, which is left. Each of those pages for each show will have a breakdown of the accessible services, but you can also check out the Access tab on the homepage of our website to learn what we do, how we do it, and see some great photos or watch videos with some descriptions in there about services that we've offered in the past and that we've got some footage of. If you want to contact me, again, my name is Alex Mooney. I'm the Access and Inclusion Manager for Chicago Children's Theater. My email address is cmooney, which is C-M-A-U-N-E-Y, at chicagochildrenstheater.org. You can also call my phone number, 773-227-0180. My extension is 322, and I'd be happy to chat with you about any and all accessible services we have at the theater.
And then where are you located?
We have our brand new building, this station, at 100 South Racine Avenue. As of next season, and actually as of this summer, that will be where all of our programming happens from now on. Brown Bear, though, will be the last show that we perform in the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, which has been our theatrical home for the last few years.
Okay.
Brown Bear itself actually is going to be a puppet show from this group coming in from Canada, and age range for that would absolutely be appropriate for kids as young as 3 and up. Their puppet shows are just beautiful and very low impact, so it's going to be perfect for our sensory-friendly crowd. And then we'll be done with the Ruth Page Center and on to the station. But the station is open basically 6 days a week, so if you wanted to come by for a tour or to get information about our classes and camps, somebody will be there at the front desk and can answer those questions. In the past, we've had just 2 summer camps. We've had our Camp Red Kite and then our theater camp.
Okay.
This year, though, we are going full tilt summer camps. So we've got some that last just a week, some that last a full 2 weeks, and they cover anything from filmmaking to improv. We've got one camp just called Parade and Performance. So think about coming in to our theater this summer and creating your very own, like, New Orleans-style second line to take in the West Loop. So we've also got classes that involve making your own films, your own TV shows. We have
circus program.
We have a circus program. Yeah, we have an aerial class that's provided through the Actors Gymnasium there for us, and that's really incredible. We will also have this will be our first time having Camp Red Kite in this building, which we're really excited about. Having our own space to control is going to be a huge win for us there. So yeah, go on our website, check out our new educational offerings. Classes and camps are running right now, actually, and for each school year, for each school semester, we'll have two sessions of 8-week classes, and our ages range from 0, I believe, all the way up through 15 for those classes. And we'll usually take submissions up through the third week of that particular class session, so come on and give us a try.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alex. That was a lot of great information, and I think a lot of our listeners who are a little, you know, wide range of people, hopefully they'll be able to find something that they will enjoy from it. If it means bringing out their grandkids or nieces and nephews or their own kids, hopefully we'll start to see some more of you guys out there.
That would be great, Brett. Thank you so much. And we want to bring as many of our programs and shows to the biggest audience possible. And I really thank you for this time to get to talk about Chicago Children's Theater. We're only set to expand from here.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Brett Shishkoff. That was Alex Mooney from the Chicago Children's Theater.
All right. Well, I definitely enjoyed the conversation with Alex, and we talked a lot about their autism-friendly like performance that they put on. They actually have a class that they put together to be able to bring in the parents of these adults and children. Actually, it's not just restricted to children, and they've done a lot for the autism side of things. But like I said, they do audio description and touch tours, and so I have nothing but great things to say about the Chicago Children's Theater. So if any of you are hesitant or not sure about which theater to start with, Chicago Children's Theater is a great one to start with. I definitely think that no matter what age you are, you're going to be able to go there and have a good time, and they're very, very accommodating over there.
Oh, and that's a very interesting point that you mentioned about the autism, because I know that, a lot of our listeners are familiar with audio description. I know that, Brett, you have covered a lot of that with your segments. And not a lot of people might be aware about, you know, the fact that there are accommodations and services for people with autism of all ages, you know, and I know that that's a big concern for individuals with autism and their families. You know, are they going to be able to enjoy something that's accessible, that tailors to their needs?
Yeah, it's sensory friendly, and that's the big thing. Is like, I've seen, looking through like the accessible calendar that they have for the for Chicago, they do have a few other theaters out there, but they do it regularly at the Chicago Children's Theater. It's not just something that you see every now and then pop up on the calendar, maybe once every other month. They actually have this stuff all the time, and so that they've taken in, like, even the seats that they sit in, making sure that there's something for them to be able to, like, maybe underneath their seat there's little ridges or bumps on there for them to be able to kind of like distract themselves a little bit, so they're not disrupting everybody else learning. And so they've done such a meticulous job of, like, just these little nuances that I've never even, like, thought of, because I'm not autistic, and so I don't really know what it works and what doesn't work. And so for them to do all of this research and look into it, and them having not just the audio description touch tours, but they also do open captioning and sign language, and just implementing, like I said in the previous segment, having a character that's a deaf character that everybody knows of, Pinocchio, like, and being able to decide to use your main character and having it being someone with a disability, that to me was so heartwarming for them to figure out a way to do that. And it was great because even in the touch tour, Pinocchio was there and they were kind of sign languaging between each other. The actress that was playing Jiminy Cricket was actually able to understand sign language herself. And I actually asked, did you know sign language before the play? And she's like, no, not really.
Wow.
So the entire cast actually started to learn sign language just because of this one actress basically coming in and playing Pinocchio. So that was what was great.
Have you heard of the show Speechless? It's on ABC 7.
I have heard of it, but I have not checked it out yet.
And that's, I know that show, you know, is also about the main character has a disability. He has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And what is unique, if you will, about that is that the actor who plays, you know, JJ is the character's name.
Okay.
But the actor, Micah Fowler, he is also an individual with cerebral palsy. That's, you know, I think it goes back to what you're mentioning about, you know, the deaf actor, and, you know, I think that it's something that more actors with disabilities should be given an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a win-win.
Yep.
You know, people with disabilities, they'll be more included in the acting field. And they're, you know, the rest of the cast, like you said, can learn more about disability and even the audience. So I think it's a win-win if more actors were included, more actors with disabilities.
Yeah, I think it will start to make the rest of the world more comfortable.
Exactly.
With us. Like, and that's the thing is, I think we have a tendency maybe to be... we want people to ask us questions. We want them to be able to come up to us and be able to feel comfortable around us. We, you know, any person with a disability, they want to feel included in some way or another. And so I think that's the great thing about the arts is I think this is another avenue that hasn't really been explored very much of someone with disability, like people with disabilities. This is just, these are stories that really... You have Helen Keller that has been, you know, that's one of the biggest stories that people know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been plays and stuff that have been put on based off of her story. But other than that, there aren't too many. Like, you might have Ray Charles. There was a movie about him.
Mm-hmm.
But you had Jamie Foxx who played Ray Charles, which
is
fine. You know, that's fine. But you didn't have someone who was blind playing.
Exactly.
So it is something where being able to explore those characters throughout history, there are a lot of very good stories out there that a blind person, a hearing impaired person, there's no reason why these disabilities can't be explored and have the actors or actresses have those specific disabilities and play those characters. I do actually, I want to make a suggestion to our listeners that if you guys would want to hear any type of like tutorials of over an app like Uber or MoveIt, I'm more than willing to do something like that as a segment. Just let me know. You can email me at Brett, B-R-E-T-T, period, S-H-I-S-H-K-O-F-F, at chicagolighthouse.org. And just let me know if that sounds like some type of show that you would like to have us go over some accessibility, even if it's like going over a Victor Reader stream or any of those type of things. I'm more than willing to do tutorials as well to try and help you guys, you know, get a little bit more acquainted with your devices. Just let me know. And I know Sandy probably... could be a good help too on some things also, if you're willing to do that, Sandy.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, if you have other suggestions for us, you know, whether it be technology or whether it be special events that you'd like to hear about, you know, more accessibility in theaters.
Yep.
Feel free to call or email me. My phone number is 312-447-3439. And you can email me too at Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, .M-U-R-I-L-L-O at chicagolighthouse.org.
Well, Sandy, it's been a great show, and I think we got to wrap this one up.
It's that time, Brett.
Got to put a bow on it.
It sure is that time, and we just want to take the opportunity to thank everyone for listening to us, as always. Again, you can check out our podcasts on the website, www.chicagolighthouse.org/radio. And there you can listen live, or you can click on the podcast link and find the Beacon and a lot of different other shows. So feel free to send us your comments and suggestions and listen to us as well.
And thank you to Alex Mooney from the Chicago Children's Theater for the interview. And then also
to Brian and Brett Manning from the Two Blind Brothers. And also thank you to Dr. Janet Slick, our CEO, and Brian Hawkins, our assistant director here at Chris Radio. And most importantly, thanks to everyone for listening.